done some work out in Southwest Alaska with Bristol Bay, and you always kind of think about that as the big granddaddy fishery, but it turns out that Southeast Alaska is worth even more than Bristol Bay.
Economic output from Southeast Alaska's salmon industry surprises researchers. It's the KHNS Local News. I'm Tara Bicknell. That story and more up next. House District 1 Republicans are seeking to recall Ketchikan Representative Kyle Johansen. That decision was made during a meeting last week. Dick Coos, chair of the District 1 Republicans, says Johansen contacted the group at the beginning of the meeting to provide an update and answer questions. Coos says after speaking with Johansen, the group discussed the issue for about an hour.
Nobody's attitude changed. They don't feel that they were, fairly treated and then being fairly represented, so they figured it was time to look for a new representative.
Coos says the group of about 16 unanimously voted to start the recall process. He says Johansen was contacted shortly after the vote and informed of the decision. In November, Johansen gave up his position as House Majority Leader and walked out of the House Majority Caucus, along with Charisse Millett of Anchorage. During public meetings held in Ketchikan in November, Johansen told constituents he was confident he would be able to rejoin the caucus. Though Johansen remains outside the caucus, he was given a seat on the House State Affairs Committee last week. Coos says the District 1 Republicans on November 26th sent a letter to Johansen requesting his resignation. He says the letter was not made public to give Johansen time to return to the caucus. When that did not happen, he says the group voted to work toward a recall. Coos says lack of trust was a major concern.
The letter that we sent to Kyle to specifically ask him to resign at that time, we talked about trust and how the public felt, how we felt. And that hasn't changed, and the circumstances and the things he's told us just lead us to not totally being trusting of what's going on.
Coos says the District 1 Republicans are in the process of forming a recall committee. According to the state rules, a recall application cannot be submitted until 120 days after the start of the legislative session. If the application is approved by the state, the group will have 180 days before the end of Johansen's term to gather signatures from qualified voters that equal 10% of the number that voted in the November 2010 general election. If enough signatures are gathered and all application requirements are met, the Division of Elections would then call for a special election. Coos says if the recall is successful, the District 1 Republicans would then solicit applications from those qualified and interested in filling the seat. He says after conducting interviews, three names would be sent to the governor for consideration. Johansen declined to be interviewed about the recall. He issued a press release Monday morning stating, quote, "While I respect the right of Republican Party leaders in Ketchikan to take this step, I'm disappointed they've chosen to do so. I strongly disagree with their attempt to thwart the will of the people as expressed in the November election, and I plan to vigorously fight this effort." End quote. Johansen goes on to say that his experience in the state capitol as staff, a lobbyist, and legislator will continue to be an advantage to the Southeast Alaska District, and that he's dedicated to doing the job for which he was elected. The press release concludes saying Johansen will make no further comment on the issue during the legislative session. In Southeast Alaska, it's easy to think about the value of salmon in dollars per pound. Fish prices are as common in conversation as the weather. But most people don't think about how the value of salmon translates into jobs and expenditure outside the industry itself. The sport fishing and conservation advocacy group Trout Unlimited is trying to change that. The organization recently commissioned a study that attempts to measure the yearly overall economic output of the commercial, sport, and subsistence salmon fisheries for Southeast. Robert Woolsey reports.
The final tally is huge, approaching $1 billion. Trout Unlimited State Director Tim Bristol says he was not expecting anything close to the $986.1 million, to be exact, since the state's most valuable salmon fisheries based on price and volume lay elsewhere.
No, we were actually really surprised when we saw just how high the figure was. You know, we had done some work out in Southwest Alaska with Bristol Bay, and you always kind of think about that as the big granddaddy fishery, but it turns out that Southeast Alaska is worth even more than Bristol Bay.
Bristol Bay sockeye far outstripped the $261 million value of Southeast salmon on the docks. In fact, Southeast salmon fisheries only account for a little more than a quarter of the state's salmon production. But the numbers start to add up for Southeast when you throw in the value of the recreational fisheries for both salmon and trout, 204 million, and the subsistence fisheries at over 1.5 million. And then there's the economic output of Southeast hatcheries. Bristol says many suspected all this fragmented information would add up to something substantial.
Putting a number on something that we all were very familiar with, and we all had our hunches, but we started to look around at the different pieces of information that existed, looking at fisheries in Southeast Alaska, and there was no one-stop shopping. You had reports dealing with sport fishing and some information about hatcheries and their contributions, and quite a bit out there about the huge impact that the commercial fishery has on the region, but there wasn't a place where you could take subsistence, sport, commercial, hatchery, and get all that information in one place.
About half as many people are employed in the salmon fisheries as work in the state and local government in Southeast, just over 7,000 individuals, or 11% of the region's employment. The timber industry, in contrast, produces less than 2% of the jobs. For research economist Tom Wege, the number of jobs is more significant than the billion-dollar figure being touted in the press.
The measure of economic output doesn't tell you all that much in and of itself. You know, the more important number from my perspective is, well, how many jobs are these industries, these fisheries, hatchery operations supporting, and, you know, how much in personal income, you know, people's wages and profits and so forth. That, to me, is a more meaningful metric.
Wege is based in Sacramento, California, but he's got a long track record of fisheries-based economics research in Alaska. In the 1980s and 90s, he conducted a number of large-scale studies for the Alaska Department of Fish and Game, while working for Jones and Stokes, an environmental consulting firm. Since forming his own company, he's worked as an independent consultant for NOAA Fisheries on a series of salmon management programs. Wege says the Trout Unlimited study took about 6 months of his firm's time. No original research was required. He says Trout Unlimited was not asking the impossible. Rather, they wanted to know about jobs related to salmon and trout fishing, and about the broader idea of use value.
So there was these two paths that we kind of went down, and treating each of the types of fisheries, that being commercial, recreational, personal use, subsistence, as its own, you know, entity, and then trying to find common, you know, measures, metrics that could be legitimately added together to come up with sort of a total, you know, valuation scheme.
And now that Trout Unlimited has data of its own, the organization hopes to paint a more accurate picture of the relationship between salmon and forest. Conspicuously absent from the study is any valuation of Southeast offshore fisheries, halibut or sablefish, or herring or shellfish or dive fisheries. State Director Tim Bristol says the study is a first step in changing the way forest resource issues are debated in Southeast Alaska, even for people in the conservation community, who he thinks still get high-centered on issues of the past. He recalls a meeting he had not too long ago with Tonga Supervisor Forrest Cole.
You know, he was talking about how you have to have widgets. You have to have something that you produce that you can report back to the folks in Washington, D.C., both higher up in the Forest Service and with the congressional delegation, to justify big expenditures of tax money in Southeast Alaska. And we were like, hey, Forrest, salmon's your widget. You know, timber may be a contributor, but the real driver, the real thing that you can point to as a source of production from Southeast Alaska are salmon.
Bristol says he hopes also to convey the importance of salmon to local community leaders and economic interests, and then look to balance the fisheries with other economic and development pursuits in Southeast Alaska. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Robert Woolsey.
Lonnie Dupre is up against the weather and the clock as he tries to become the first person to solo climb Denali in January. Dupre spent a sixth day in a snow cave at 17,200 feet Monday. In an audio report posted on the expedition website, Dupre described trying conditions inside the 3x3x6.5-foot snow trench.
I'm still trying to locate new places to go to the bathroom in here. because you can't go outside. It's blowing about 50 and it's about 40 below zero.
Dupre says it's dark and about 5 below zero inside the cramped cave. He says the wind-forced extended stay at the 17-2 camp is stretching things to the limit.
Supplies are kind of holding out okay, although I'm running out of battery power, which I need for my headlamp in order to be able to cook and stuff. I think sleeping up here at 17,000 feet, I might be getting a little bit of drain bramage. I'm not sure. And anyways, I'm also having a hard time keeping my feet warm because I'm stationary all the time. My bag's icing up as well.
Dupre says he was hoping to use a forecast break in the wind yesterday or today to climb down to his previous camp at 14,000 feet, where he has extra supplies stashed in another snow cave. The lower altitude should also help him physically recover for a possible summit push before month's end. I'm Tara Bicknell for KHNS.